Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday morning. It is the 27th of July and very nice to have you with us. That's right. Whatever. All right. I'm getting used to, I put the headphones in and I couldn't hear myself, so here we are. Good morning, everybody. How are you? Let me introduce the panel and we'll get started this morning, and then we'll introduce you and invite you to come in and be a part of our discussion this morning on a wide range of issues. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
Hey, are you older than you were the last time I saw you?
Yeah, you know, I'm a year older.
Aren't we all?
I'm a year older now, but certainly not much wiser.
No, that's not true at all. Alan celebrated a birthday on Saturday. It's up to him to tell you what, if, I don't, you know.
What was 74?
74.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, that's a great age.
Do you think so?
Absolutely.
Well, I think
it's an age of wisdom.
What is 75? Is like platinum, right?
75 is big stuff.
Yeah. So that's
we'll
good.
Have a cookout on 75
right here in the studio. Well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
You know, very nice, and we wish you a happy birthday. And I know folks will write in as well. Now, Barbara Smith is with us. She is an essayist, author, editor, activist, and it's very nice to have you back.
Thank you so much, Joe. I missed everybody.
I know you were on vacation last week, so it's a delight to have you back.
Thank you.
And hopefully you're rested and happy.
I am.
and speaking of rested and happy, Mike Spain is here, a Times Union Associate Editor. Always a pleasure to have Mike on the program. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you. And we welcome you, as I mentioned, roundtable at WAMC.org. WAMC.org/roundtable if you would like to join us on our website. Let us talk about the issues of the day. They begin with the Hillary Clinton story and the Benghazi. And there's two sides to the story. There's the actual story, and then there's how the New York Times screwed it up.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to get...
That's interesting.
Yeah, I want to get to both aspects of the story. Amid renewed controversy surrounding Hillary Rodham Clinton's use of private email for government work, a dispute erupted on Saturday over when and how she would publicly testify before the House Select Committee investigating the 2012 terrorist attacks on... That's you. There you go. The House terrorist attacks, investigating the 2012 terrorist attacks on the American diplomatic outpost in Benghazi, Libya. Mrs. Clinton's aides announced Saturday morning that she had accepted an invitation to testify on October 22nd, but a spokesman for the Republican-led committee said hours later that no agreement had been reached. And by day's end, it was not clear what exactly they were arguing over. And the question I have is, did the New York Times add to that confusion?
Mike.
Well, I mean, Friday morning, everybody got alerts from the New York Times that a criminal investigation has been launched.
Right.
Because allegedly the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, a couple of years ago had what was regarded as classified information on her private server and had been sent out through a private email, which is a violation of the law. However, it looks like they were not strictly classified documents. They were it was information that should have been held confidential and private, but it's questionable whether it was a violation of the law, and they're stepping back from that. But a lot was said about it before it got clarified.
Well, but if you read the original Times piece, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but it seemed to me that they were pointing the finger at Mrs. Clinton and saying that the two inspectors general were basically asking for a criminal investigation, and they were pointing the finger at her. And subsequent dispatches seemed to say, and changes seemed to say, it wasn't her necessarily that was being questioned here, but maybe some of the people who said her stuff. So the Times really ended up with a little egg on its face as a result.
You summarized it.
Yes.
Summarized it.
But
no, not at all. But I was just going to read the two lines and the subtle changes that they made, but obviously very important changes. So it went from, because originally they said that two inspectors general have asked the Justice Department to open a criminal investigation into whether Hillary Rodham Clinton mishandled sensitive government information on a private email account she used as Secretary of State. That clause was then changed into whether sensitive government information was mishandled in connection with the personal email account of Hillary Rodham Clinton used as Secretary of State.
That's called a hedge, right?
Yes, yes. So, and as of early Friday morning, the Times article contained no update, notification, clarification, or correction regarding the changes made to the article.
Yeah, that's true. And one other thing that has occurred to me, Joe and group, and that is that all of a sudden we're seeing a very sympathetic Joe Biden all over the place. Now, you know, I happen to still believe to this moment that it's going to be Jeb Bush versus Hillary in this election. But if Hillary falls, then it seems to me it's going to be Biden's because he's sympathetic, because people, many Democrats love him. And because, you know, he's been a very good vice president, a loyal vice president. And if Hillary goes, then it seems to me that Biden gets the nod, not these other guys, the governor, the unknown governor of
Martin O'Malley,
you know, of Maryland.
Bernie Sanders. Or,
well, Bernie Sanders, you know, I mean, a lot of people are going to vote for Bernie Sanders. They are. But so far, we know that there is a very specific group of people who love Bernie and who are going to, and I'm one of them, and who are going to vote for the guy. You made a face, Mike.
Are you announcing who you're voting for here?
Well, the way I feel is if I walk in there, I probably will vote for Bernie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Isn't it about timing, though, if Hillary's to implode and somehow be knocked out of this race?
Yes.
Won't others jump in? Are there other Democrats who would be interested?
Name them.
John Kerry.
Nah.
Really?
That
doesn't
seem
plausible.
He's done it before. He's riding
Barbara, I think that Mike makes a point. Once you've had the fickle finger of fame land on you, you know, you never quite get over it. And you think if you had another shot, you know, Astorino, who ran against Cuomo the last time, is all over the place saying, give me another shot, give me another shot. And
there was a guy who ran for president in 1960, and then his political career ended when he lost a governor's race in California.
That's correct.
Come back later and be elected president in 1968. So.
Yes. Well, the reason I had the reaction that I did when you mentioned John Kerry is because it doesn't seem plausible for, you know, success. I mean, I agree that somebody might want to get in because they love the process and the...
He's the richest man in the Senate. That helps. Mm-hmm.
So let me go back to the original concept of the question, which was the implosion of Hillary Clinton. So here is a woman who has had a 30-year political career.
Yes.
So what could happen now that hasn't happened before?
It's clear that the Republicans see her as the strongest of the candidates.
Sure.
And they're doing everything in their power to get rid of her. And the dance that you alluded to before between the committee doing the quote investigation, the Republican committee in quotes doing the investigation, is after her. So she knows that. And the one thing I really love about Hillary is she's tough, boy. You know, what might make other mortals cower in fear doesn't stop her. She just does what she has to do, and therefore would probably be a pretty good president.
Now, we're all, you know, cynical people and cynical journalists and cynic types here. So we see
skeptical is a better word.
That's
yes,
right.
Thank
skeptical.
You.
Skeptical. Thank you. That was the word I was searching for.
Right, yes.
Skeptical. But cynical too, but okay, skeptical. And so the fact that this particular investigation, if it were to happen and she's called on October 22nd, I'm sure the date of that has nothing to do
with
the calendar year and the fact that she would be running for president if nominated a week later.
Sure.
Well, so, it's October 22nd of 2015, though,
This year.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's this year.
We are so ramped up into the campaign, we forget.
Their job is to get her out of here. They want her out.
They want to damage her, though.
And if they can get her out, they're going to get her out. And in the meantime, they're a mess. And I hate to say it on these airways because Every email will start to
light up
again, just as they have all week long last week. But Trump is leading in all the polls.
He's not, actually. Scott Walker's now ahead.
In the Iowa poll.
In the Iowa poll. In every poll I read, he's leading.
No. Mike's right. In Iowa, he's ahead. Walker's ahead by 2 points. Right. But everywhere else, in the national polls, in New Hampshire.
The Zogby poll that came out over the weekend.
Trump is leading.
Yeah.
Well, E.J. Dionne, the great columnist, made an allusion last week that I thought fit. It's like a summer reality show. People are enthralled by it, and they're enjoying it, and the ratings are high. But you know what happens to these reality shows? They kind of, after a while, play themselves out, and people get serious.
I don't know, Mike. I mean, I really don't know. I mean, you look at how some of the great despots in history have done and done their thing. And I don't like to mention the H word. But you're right.
A lot of people who were regarded as buffoons made it to power.
It's either the Jews or the Hispanics now. It's almost a play that is defined. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are falling for it. It's disgusting.
Do you think they're falling for it, or they're falling for the... I go back to Mike's question on the show, but I was watching this thing on C-SPAN over the weekend. The road to the White House.
Right.
And they had the event that Trump did, and there's people lined up almost a mile to see the guy. And they were talking to people in line, and they said, well, why are you out here? And I like that he's speaking his mind. I like that he shoots from the hip. I like that there is a breath of fresh air. Will you vote for him? Oh, no, of course not.
Mm. Oh,
and I thought, and that was the regular response. Now, are you going to...
Yes, I am. Okay. The fact is that the pollsters, everybody says, well, they didn't talk to me and about this kind of stuff. But pollsters with some real regularity get it right. They get it right before elections. And when they say he's leading, in the polls. Not because anecdotally you talk to a guy in the line who says...
No, that's true. But I'm curious as to the people who are going to see him that are spending an hour and a half in a line to see the guy and then aren't actually doing anything. He had an event on the border. It was an hour he went down. It was obviously, you know, a quick run in. He went in. He had a press availability. He had two questions. He didn't like him and he left.
Right, but to your point, Alan, and you know, when a poll, when there are so many people mentioned in a poll, and they throw all these names at you, people 17. Will give you the names that they know best, and certainly he's one of the best known names. It would be difficult for most people to sit down and write down all 17 names and get it right, like on a pop quiz,
or even who's the first president of the United States.
Well, that's unfortunately true, also. But in this particular case. It's to his advantage that there are so many different names in it. And if that gets spread out among the electorate gets split among all the others, he doesn't need a big majority. He just needs 19% to be on top of the polls. And that's not a huge following. It'll be a very interesting couple of months.
Let's just see.
but you still believe it's going to be Jeb Bush.
I do.
Yeah, so I mean, he's going to be bounced out eventually.
I think Jeb Bush has the money. I think people feel comfortable with the guy, and I also think he's the biggest danger by far to the Democrats. I mean, the middle class.
Because he's not a right wing; he's a moderate.
Yeah, because he's a moderate. Because he's well spoken. Because he's married to a Hispanic woman, because all those things that could get you the American middle class, which are the deciders in these elections.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get to a couple of letters, and then we'll take a news break, and we'll come back with many other topics as well. We welcome you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Hudson Valley Exposition, Riverfront Green Park, Peekskill, celebrating the region with activities for all ages with a kids' zone, farmer's market, the Daisy Joplin Band, and an evening laser light show, Saturday, August 1st, hvexposition.com. Marshall and Sterling, insurance for business, home, auto, bonds, group benefits, and financial planning for 150 years. Our people are your best insurance. Offices in Leeds and Saratoga Springs, marshallsterling.com/leads. And from Chester Theater, presenting Memory House, a play about mothers and daughters, starring Deborah Jo Rupp, July 29th through August 9th, chestertheater.org for tickets.
Our wonderful North Country correspondent, Pat Bradley, sent me a few articles over the weekend and said that here's information about some funny articles that I wrote about Donald Trump. And I wrote her back and I said, thank you. I said, one thing I think we've learned over the last 2 weeks is that people, even when you don't want or intend to talk about Donald Trump, you end up talking about Donald Trump.
Indeed.
It is. It's almost impossible not to. That's exactly what's happened. And this morning, we have many letters, and most of them have to do with Donald Trump.
Indeed.
When we were supposed to be talking about Hillary Clinton.
That's right. That's right.
I thought my contribution was, I'm sorry, I know this sounds bad, but relatively important about what could happen if Hillary faded. You know,
yes,
that Biden would be the natural to step in. Nobody seems to care, so I'll just shut up.
Oh, no, I think that's plausible, too. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you, that was actually the question I was going to ask you when I got sidetracked because I screwed up on my dates. But if so, the timing, that was actually my point. If October 22nd is that in, then she implodes, say, after that, is it then too late for Joe Biden to step in and say?
No, you see, the thing about a convention is they can do what they want. You know, there are enough votes. There are enough people who can come.
But it would then be November, December, January. You'd have less than 3 months before your first primary.
Well, they would have to, look. Anybody can play this game of what if. But it's unlikely it's going to happen. But if it happens, they'll find a way to find the best and strongest candidate that they can. And I think Biden would be that strong candidate. Yeah. I don't know. So anyway, we heard from Bruno, who said, hi, guys. I don't know where you live, but I do reside in the Schenectady area. Everyone around here seems to be proponents of Trump ideology. I'm a legal alien from continental Europe, and unfortunately, he does represent what America is all about, God, greed and guns. And that's from Bruno. And then Rich said, Alan is so wrong to promote Jeb Bush. I'm not promoting Jeb Bush. I'm just simply saying my analysis is he wins. But who knows?
The nomination.
Yeah. The nomination. Yeah. Right.
He stood by while his father and brother did so many wrongs. The Bush family is one of a super big business. Alan did not think our New York governor would win. Let's talk about the baggage Bush has. I didn't think our New York governor would win. Wrong. Okay, there you go.
Rob Astorino didn't think he would win. He was wrong.
We only have 10 seconds, but go ahead.
Okay, well, there are many more. And our good friend Kenny G says, please give me a break. About 75% of the Republicans polled favor someone other than Trump. As the field now at 16 is whittled down, his numbers will drop steadily.
Here Kenny you go. G. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, and Mike Spain making up the panel this morning. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We should note that we weren't here Friday.
Right.
And because we were working on the new, our studio, our temporary studio that we're moving into, we're not quite ready to move in yet. So we're still in the other studio, which is nice because we're here for a while. And then, but I believe tomorrow we'll be in the new studio.
Mm.
Do you understand that? Is that the understanding?
All I do is run the place. And, and as the old saying goes, I'm always the last to know.
All right.
Let me ask this for the listener. What does it mean?
What does it mean? It really means nothing. Mike, hopefully they can hear us.
Well, our listeners are very discerning people. If they look in on the...
On the
webcam,
web stream, right,
and see something different, it might be disturbing to some of them. For example, we just got a letter about Jeb Bush. Could we read you? Stop calling John Ellis Bush Jeb Bush. See, everybody has a thing. It's either Jeb or John, whatever. You see?
James Carter.
You
William
see?
Clinton. We didn't do it for them either.
You see?
Well they do it. I mean, that's how he signed. He signed Jimmy Carter. He signs a Jeb Bush.
His campaign sign is J-E-B exclamation point.
Right.
No Bush. This is Jeb exclamation point.
All right.
And John says to the doctor and compatriots, that's you guys, Jeb Bush is far, capital letters, from moderate. He presents himself in such a way as to appear moderate, but at his core, he is a Christian extremist. Were he to be elected, the Christian flag would quickly replace the stars and stripes. I don't think so.
What is the Christian flag?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't. Do we have one of those? Anyway.
What did they have in the Crusades? What was that?
Some kind of cross. I can visualize it. It's like a red curvy cross.
Yeah,
you've seen those pictures.
Like you weren't there, were you?
No. No, I wasn't there.
All right. So let's move to, as I mentioned, that was also a way of saying that we were off on Friday. So we want to get to the story. The Sandra Bland story is obviously a big story and a tragic story.
Huge.
So the article this morning in the New York Times is fascinating, talking about Prairie View A&M University, the historically black institution founded 140 years ago. Its students were still waging a civil rights war that had ended elsewhere decades before. This was all in 2005 when Sandra Bland enrolled in the school. Against white Waller County officials for the right to vote in the place that they lived. It took years of federal court order, but the students won when Ms. Bland returned to the college in the morning of July 9th, driving 16 hours from Chicago to interview for a job at her alma mater. The Justice Department had abandoned its court-ordered oversight of students' voter registration. The campus had its own polling place, and the county had, in one key respect, passed a racial milestone. 4 days later, Ms. Bland was dead in a county jail cell after a routine traffic stop by a state trooper, and it escalated into a physical confrontation not 500 yards from the university's entrance. There are a lot of questions about what happened, obviously, and there's still an autopsy is saying that the injuries are consistent with suicide, according to the prosecutors. And there are reports of, I believe, heart attack, correct?
I haven't heard about that.
Well,
I have to check on that. Okay. Well, now that I have those looks, I'll go.
Given how young she is.
Or distress, some sort of distress within. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so what do we make of this case? What do we learn from this case? And what do we, and where do we go from here in finding out what happened?
I guess I'm interested in, like, first causes. The fact that a traffic stop for not putting on your turn signal turned into a full-throttle confrontation and arrest. And if people have seen the video, what's interesting is it seems to me that this police officer was following her car. She sees that he is in her mirror, and she pulls over to comply with the fact that there's a police car behind her. And he gets her then. They then, you know, like there's stories or there are articles that say she was pulled over for not signaling. That doesn't even seem to make sense to me, because it wasn't that he saw her, you know, some distance away or without him being on her tail, do that, pulled over. He pulled over because she saw the police car behind her. And I don't know how many people would actually put on their turn signal, have the presence of mind to put on their turn signal if there was a police car right behind them and they're thinking, I need to pull over. They're not necessarily thinking of signaling.
It's a catch-22. You're so intimidated by the police officer on your tail that you're giving deference to the police officer in the process. You're giving him something to pull you over by.
So,
right. But
so,
the thing is that and then it escalates. You know, she was irritated and she had a perfect right to be, because...
Well, he asked her, why are you upset about? And she told him, and he got, well, as you said, you know, it escalated.
And then he asked her to put out her cigarette. Now, I don't even know what that was about. I mean, what was that about? Was he asthmatic?
Cigarette may have been a weapon.
I've heard that. But it was just, thing is, let me just say this. As a black woman who drives and has driven, you know, for a number of years, can be a daunting proposition to figure out what do I do and how do I conduct myself so this kind of thing never happens to me.
Sure.
Long before this incident happened, which was only a couple of weeks ago, I was fully aware that there were certain things I needed to do, like not speed. You know, like I have friends who joke with me, like, why don't you drive faster? Talking about on the highway, not in town. But the thing is, it's like, because I don't ever want to be pulled over. Sure. That's why, because people like me who get pulled over sometimes end up dead. And that's a consciousness I had, as I said, long before this incident happened.
So let's assume for a moment, just an assumption. I'm not saying it, but let's assume that their story is correct, that she committed suicide. Let's just say that. She would not be dead. That's the whole point. She would not be dead unless the stupid jerk was pulling her over, making her lie on the and she said the best thing. I did watch the tape, and she said the best thing I think that was said in the whole thing. This is over a failure to signal.
Right.
This whole thing is over a failure to signal. I mean, that's what
right.
is so terrible.
But
about.
She was not seen. A comparable person of her age, he was 28 years old, right? A young white woman, college graduate, whatever. I mean, it just would have been a very different interaction.
Absolutely.
It would have been a very different interaction. That's what this country continues to grapple with. It's different standards of justice or injustice. It's just very painful.
What about Waller County, Texas? I mean, this is a county that is called one of the most racist in the nation. Mother Jones is reporting that of the 12,300 stops that took place in the year 2014, 29% involved black drivers, even though black people only make up 25% of the county. White drivers were involved in 44% of the stops, even though the county is 70% white.
Well, before Stop and Frisk became kind of front burner as far as how we see the dysfunctions of our criminal justice system, driving while black. Remember when driving
sure.
while black was a focus of attention? And again, it's a very, very common, too old story. Disproportionate, you know, horrible outcomes when people are stopped for little or nothing. I've been stopped. I'll never get being stopped in Watertown, Massachusetts back in the 1970s when I lived in the Boston area. I wasn't driving. But why were we stopped? And the only thing that the officer had to say when the person who was driving showed her license, she had recently moved from California. She had a California license.
Was she black?
No, she was not. But I was black.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
He could see me. And the thing is, like, there's no way he could possibly know she had a California license before he stopped us, because the car had Massachusetts plates.
And so, what was the result?
Just, you know, you need to get that changed.
Admonished.
You need to get a new license.
And that's in Massachusetts.
Right.
But for anybody who has not watched the video, of Sandra Bland and the
sure.
Texas stop that we're talking about, it just lets you come to your own conclusion. But I can't see how anybody could possibly conclude that this officer wasn't, angry that she was, not immediately respectful and compliant to her. And it just escalated so quickly. And then he pulled her out of the car, using a stun gun, threatening her with a stun gun, and then pulled her away from the view of the camera, quite knowledgeable that she was out of view of the camera and anything he was doing would not be captured on the video. There was audio that did reveal a lot that was happening, and you could see a little bit of a reflection of what was going on. But I ask anybody who's got questions about this to go to the New York Times story or any place, just Google it, and, Sandra Bland video, and make your own conclusion, and it's just outrageous. I would say that it's probably not advisable if you're in one of the most racist counties in Texas, which
or
this
anywhere
evidently
else,
is,
Mike.
Or anywhere else, to be contentious with the police. Argue it afterwards. It's good advice. But you could see a lot was at stake for this woman who was about to pull into the college where she was to have the interview and have her career.
I think she'd already had the interview, and she let her family know she had gotten the job.
Yeah.
But we keep hearing stories from parents, African-American parents, who have the, quote, conversation with their kids about, how you behave when something like this happens, and you never, ever become disrespectful to these people.
That was Mayor Bill de Blasio in New York City. His son is African-American, and, you know, he gave him that advice. And when he said that, he got criticized.
Yes, because people don't want to deal with reality.
Well, yeah, no, that's correct. And both sides are right. You shouldn't have to do it. But in the on the other hand, you know, that's the reality of how it works.
Bingo, you're right.
So how do you think she died, Barbara?
I have no idea. One of the things you mentioned, a heart attack, I've heard something about epilepsy. They also talk about the intake forms at the jail that she did not personally fill out, that were filled out in response to what she said, and that there were two different answers as far as have you been suicidal or had suicidal thoughts. I think in one place it said that she had, and then the other it said not. So there's just all kinds of complicating factors. I have no idea how she died, but I do know it is absolutely pathetic that a young woman who had such capabilities, such promise, she had gotten the job.
Well, that's right. That was the question, and she would. She talked to her attorney, who said, "Look, I'll get you out of here. Just be patient," and then to then kill yourself does seem to be. It's a strange thing to, and I guess that it brings up obviously our trust in the county and what they're telling us.
Right, right. If this was if this place had not had such a horrific record, you might be more compelled to say that this is a tragic ending, and we can't know every psychic anomaly that everybody has, and the disgrace that she went through that, and the way that she was feeling at the time. You might attach some of that to it, but I'm a lot more skeptical. Place.
It makes you so angry.
Angry, I mean, I'm
furious about the thing.
Yeah. It never had to happen. This was just outrageous. And it was, I put all the blame on the cop. He just instigated this. No, watch the video. This is my personal opinion. He instigated it and he propelled it forward. She didn't help. She wasn't respectful. She wasn't. She didn't put out her cigarette like he asked her to do, or told her to do, ordered her to do. You know, that's not the reason to pull somebody out of a car, handcuff them, and then have them thrown in jail.
This cognitive dissonance, too. I mean, we will never know what was going through her mind. We may never know why and how she died. But the thing is, she had just gotten a job at her alma mater. Do you know how proud one feels when that happens? A place where you got your education wants you back. I've had that experience with my alma mater. And the thing is, so she's driving along. She's from Chicago. She's not from there, although she did go to college there. And the thing is, in her mind, she might be thinking, I'm just a regular, very successful human being here who's had a wonderful experience, you know? I just got this job that is my dream job, and I'm feeling really great. And then this person's going to bring me down to his level, and she just wasn't having it.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about other stories as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Doan Stewart School, Rensselaer, New York, an early childhood through grade 12 coeducational day school for more than 150 years, announcing admission reception Wednesday, August 5th at 4 p.m. DoanStewart.org/visit. Berkshire Stringed Instruments School of Lutery, Windsor Mill, North Adams, Massachusetts, working to guide students through hand-building guitars, mandolins, and ukuleles. BerkshireStringedInstruments.com for class registration. And from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. Not surprisingly, we have many letters on the topic we just discussed, as well as other topics as well. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we go over to Alan.
Well, Joan writes on the Sandra Bland video, I saw the video and came away feeling she was not contentious. She was being assertive, something I always emphasize to my students when I taught them. Know the difference. Assertive is good. Aggressive can get you in trouble. And what right does he have, I presume the policeman, to order her to put out her cigarette? She was assertive. That was it. That's from Joan. And from Marjorie, Speaking of the cigarette, when I came to the Canadian-American border, returning home from Toronto, the border guard told me to stop eating while he checked my passport. While I questioned this, he called me into the office, and I spent an hour there being interrogated. I think it's a power trip. Michael, will he be charged? What's the situation? And that's from Michael.
He's on administrative leave as... He's on administrative duties. He's been
taken off the
relieved of active duty and is on administrative duty.
And Debbie says, I hope one thing that comes from this tragedy is that people who can't be found guilty of driving while black are finally beginning to comprehend structural racism and white privilege. The story sickens me. The truth must come out. That's from Debbie M. By the way, Barb, if you want to react to any of these...
No, go right I know ahead. We have other
okay.
topics.
And Irene said, I have watched the video a number of times over. Sandra Bland's voice was perfectly calm, even when she affirmed the cop's observation that she was irritated for being pulled aside and gave a perfectly good reason for being irritated. She only began to resist when the policeman asked her to put out her cigarette. His words... I will light you up, continue to shock and chill me. It sounds as if he wanted to torture her.
That was with a taser, right? He threatened her with a taser. Yeah.
Yes.
And Bonnie says, if you watch the beginning of the video, Ms. Bland's car is first seen coming out of a street driveway on the left, making a right turn. The cop goes a short distance and does 180 and comes up on her bumper. Whether he used light... IDK, I mean, I assume that means I don't know.
Yeah,
right.
And or he used a signal.
Right. And Tom says, and don't forget the video the police released was edited. And Robert says, while I think racial profiling, if a major factor in many stops, is sloppy reasoning, to just say that race is the reason for blacks getting tickets disproportionate to their size and their population, many tickets are given for issues to do with vehicles being in poor shape, and that has to do with the ability of owners to pay to keep their cars in good repair. In other words, fixing broken taillights promptly being poor may be a bug factor, too. And Casey, I have been stopped by police a number of times in my life, usually small towns in upstate New York. I grew up in Boston. In Malone, New York, in the 1970s, I was walking, in capital letters, down Main Street looking like a hippie. He wanted to know why I was in town and who I knew. Altamont, New York, driving through town one night. Where did you come from? Who are you and where are you going? I just got out of work. I'm a counselor at a rehab. Voorheesville, taking a corner too fast, told me I had a brake light out, not true, wanted to know where I was coming from and going, no ticket. In all cases, I think being stopped may have been bogus. I am white, was respectful. I don't think you can behave badly when a cop stopped you. It's clear they have the upper hand. And Megan wishes me a happy birthday and hopes that I'll live to 103. Wayne says...
Or more, she says.
Or more, yeah.
Why stop there?
Yeah. Reason to stop at 103.
Yeah. And Wayne says, the officer should be fired, never be a cop again. And what scares me is that some of his fellow officers empathize with him for what he did. There's got to be better screening for racist cops, period. Let's see here. And Steven says, guilty of living while black, now I'll light you up, is part of our phraseology. Oh, boy. And it goes on. And George says, there's no justification for the trooper to demand that she put out the cigarette in a private vehicle. There's no reason to pull her out of the vehicle or arrest her. The arrest was essentially for not showing enough deference to the trooper. And then Ken says, a white cop pulls over a car with out-of-state plates driven by a black woman. She's brutalized, arrested, and winds up dead in a jail cell. Racist Texas cop delivered to a sheriff with a history, in quotes. Not rocket science, folks. And Susan says, Sandra Bland wasn't just having it because she knew her rights. Her stated purpose to her mother before she died was to stop the injustice in this country towards black people in our criminal justice system. She knew she wasn't required to put out a cigarette in her own car or to get out of the car because she wasn't being arrested at that point until the officer escalated the situation. And that's what I got you.
All right, we are going to move on to another topic, and we are just about out of time, so we'll make it quick. But we should mention that, because, again, we weren't here on Friday for the panel, that there was another tragic shooting, this one in Louisiana in a movie theater where a man got up in the early moments of the screening, and shot several people within the movie theater. The man was described as a drifter with mental illness history, and 59 years old, John Russell Hauser of Phoenix City, Alabama. And he was originally, as I said, from Alabama. What he was doing in Lafayette, 500 miles away from his home, people still don't know exactly the answer to that question, or what the motivation was in shooting the people.
But interestingly, Joe, this morning out comes Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, right. and announces that other states, because apparently he got the thing in Alabama, something like that, the gun.
Phoenix City pawn shop.
Yeah, should toughen their laws equal to what goes on in Louisiana. I was fascinated by the fact that Jindal, who sees himself as a presidential candidate, saw fit to say that.
Does Louisiana actually have tougher laws?
According to him, and they do. I can't.
Yeah, the guy bought the gun a couple of years ago, or in 2014, mm-hmm. so just early last year, in a pawn shop out of the state of Louisiana. And you know, I think it does underscore the ease and availability of handguns and all kinds of firearms. This guy was obviously deranged. He was staying in this hotel room 500 miles from where he was released. He's already had some involuntary, he was committed, his family had him committed to an institution because of his mental condition. He was just recently delivered the divorce papers from his wife. And I mean, the guy was in a bad mental state. That's a terribly tragic thing. When you make it easy to have a firearm, it makes it worse, you know?
And this is the kind of thing that doesn't happen, as President Obama regularly points out, because we have one of these at least once a week, it seems.
Right.
But he points out that this is the only Western developed nation where you have all the other factors, mental illness, other kinds of situations, but you don't have the wholesale availability of of weapons, and it ends so badly when that's the case. I mean, the one factor that's different between the United States and all those other countries that also have mentally ill people and disgruntled people.
I just want one last letter, Joe, only because we like to read stuff that is not, I like to read stuff that I don't agree with. Here it is. Hi, Alan. What's a reason for not putting the cigarette out? Is it such an unreasonable request? Maybe the cop was allergic to smoke.
Well, if the officer had said, "Ma'am, would you please extinguish your cigarette? It's bothering me. Thank you." You know, if he was polite to her, perhaps it would have had a different thing. She had the legal right to smoke it, but asserting your legal rights in a situation like that isn't always the best idea.
We are out of time. I want to thank all of the folks who wrote in, and we continue to welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. And Alan, Barbara, Michael, thank you very much for being with us this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.